Welcome to SciShow Tangents, is the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green. And joining me this week, as always, is science expert Sari Riley.
Hello.
And our resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
Hello.
So how are we feeling about New Year's resolutions in the scientific community? Because I've heard that they're not much. There's not much that recommends them.
I thought you meant, like, we, as the three of us, how are we feeling about New Year's resolutions for us and our brains in this genus?
How I feel about it is that the evidence suggests that this isn't the way to do it. So I'm trying to not, even though my brain says, you should probably do that. Mm-hmm. Have some goals.
I think you told me this last year. And so last year I didn't make any goals. And I kind of felt bad about it. I kind of felt bad about it all year.
Well, don't worry. You would have felt bad when you didn't meet your goals.
Yeah. So I guess you just feel bad no matter what you do.
We should stop ending
set
years.
Little goals.
Yeah, I think I might.
This is a good idea.
I think I might make some this year.
Super achievable things.
Yeah,
that's my general strategy. It's like whenever I feel a burst of motivation, you know the one.
Yeah.
Like January, it's never it. January, I'm tired. It's cold. I just want to be warm. But like April, that's a good time. October for me, great time. I love the beginning of October.
An October resolution.
There's kind of that breeze in the air and it's bracing you. And
yeah, it's a little bit colder. So then I don't feel like I'm hot all the time. And so I can exercise without sweating too much. So I recommend resolutions intermittently, just when you feel like you can do it.
So we need Halloween resolutions.
Yes. Turn your favorite holiday into a motivational one also, Sam.
What's the smallest thing that still counts as a resolution? So it can't be something I'm already doing, but it has to be like so achievable that I'm definitely going to achieve it. This is what I'm looking for. I have one. Mine is that whenever I get a haircut, I want to leave the haircutty place with an appointment for my next haircut, which is something that I have heard a lot of people do. But I have never done.
I kind of feel like it's way weirder that you don't schedule your next one before you leave. It's like
I don't know.
When you leave, they're probably like,
it.
Did that guy just leave without scheduling his next one? It's like, why?
They think I'm so strange. He's like, what a weirdo. He's a YouTuber, right? That's what they say.
That explains it.
They're like, he comes back, so he didn't hate his haircut. But
yeah.
I think this is achievable for you. I think you can do this.
I'm just going to do that. That's a thing that I'm going to change about my lifestyle, and it's very boring.
I think those are the best kinds of resolutions because those are the sustainable changes.
Sustainable changes. This is what we're looking for. I'm not trying to revolutionize my life. Just trying to make one thing a little easier. Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory, but they're also playing for Hank Bucks, and one of them will win at the end of the episode. Now, as always, we're going to introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem. This week, it's from me. I'm sorry if this seems icky, but everything's a little bit sticky. Particles, they stick together, like hooks in a bird's feather. There's a tiny, invisible force tether. Describing it's a little bit tricky. Now, different particles stick different amounts, and depending on that, they can stick or bounce, or slide past each other like a basket of balls, and some particles barely stick at all. Sticking, sliding, and bouncing mass is solid, liquid, or finally, gas. With enough energy, it's a no-brainer. They bounce off each other and fill their container. Gas, 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 gas. Gas, 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 gas. I felt like there needed like a last couplet to round out the poem, but I couldn't figure it out. I feel like it was done, but like in terms of it wasn't done. Yeah. So I just said gas a bunch of times.
Forget physics class or whatever. Just listen to that poem. You can skip
That's
all
right.
of like
it's all
10th
done.
Grade or something.
I did it. I did all of 10th grade. I did states of matter. Plasma, don't even think about it. That's a different thing.
Don't worry about it. It's for TVs only, right?
That's right. Plasma. And blood.
That's different stuff, right? Is that two different stuff? The plasma and blood?
Yes.
The plasma and TV.
TVs are made from blood. That's the secret that the big TV doesn't want you to know. Yeah.
That's how they do it so cheaply. They just take people's blood. So the topic of the day is glass?
It's
gas, which is a state of matter. And I tried to explain using our traditional SciShow Tangents balls in my poem what gas is, But I'm sure that there are some edge cases that are going to mess this up. Sari, what is gas?
I didn't want to think about the edge cases, but
good
yes.
idea. Let's not do it.
There are the states of matter, like you said, solid, liquid, gas, plasma. We can dip a little bit into plasma if you want. But basically, gas is generally neutrally charged particles that are far apart balls bouncing off of each other. They're so far apart that in most cases, we can't see them. They're all around us in the atmosphere, scattered about.
Yeah.
And when you see something, so like if you say you see steam or smoke or something, there are gases as part of that, but the steam, like the opaqueness, is condensed liquid water. Very tiny droplets.
So when you see like steam in the shower, you're not really seeing steam. That's little droplets. And there's like humidity around. Like in a power plant where they're using steam, like actual water vapor, just like pure vaporized water to drive turbines, that is entirely invisible and you would only see it as heat. And it is so dangerous that it's like a concern that sometimes there can be a steam leak and you can't see it. And all it would do is just completely destroy your body.
Yeah. So gases are weird if you think about it, because I feel like a lot of people would say, oh, I've seen gas. I've seen steam.
There are some visible gases.
Yeah, there are like light yellow.
Yeah, like yellow, like a bromine gas is orange.
But for the most part, gases you sense with your other senses. So either the temperature of them, if it's exceptionally hot, you can smell some gases, but not others. So like mercaptan is a gas that gets added to a natural gas pipe because that methane is generally odorless, but then you can smell mercaptan. So you can't see it. You wouldn't be able to smell it, but we add a smelly gas so that you can whiff it. Yeah. But otherwise, gas is a pretty undetectable or hard to study thing, which is really interesting. Like we know so much about it now.
It was kind of a long time before we were like, I bet that stuff's the same stuff as the other stuff. That was a big insight for humans. It's weird to stick your hand out of a really fast car and be like, wow, gas can be pretty hard. Like a hurricane force wind. Just gas.
Just gas hitting you.
It's just real fast gas.
Yeah, it's fast gas. And so then there's like more of it in a smaller place, kind of.
Yeah,
it's all hitting
it's pressure.
You.
Sure. You said it was a long time before we figured that out. What's a long time?
Yeah. So the origin of the word gas comes from the 1650s or so.
Oh, wow.
There's a Flemish chemist named Jean-Baptiste van Helmont.
Nice.
Who was an earlier
definitely
chemist.
Definitely not a vampire. Don't worry. Yeah.
He could have been a vampire hunter, okay?
One of the two.
And instead of studying blood, he was studying gas. And he was just like looking at chemical reactions that produce gas. He especially was perplexed by carbon dioxide because he couldn't get it to condense. Mm. And so he made up the word gas, probably from the Greek word chaos, meaning empty space.
Ooh, whoa, what?
Which is very cool. He's probably influenced by the 16th century physician and natural philosopher Paracelsus, who used chaos to denote like spirit things. Like, we just don't understand. There's spirits. And so this chemist was like, well, gas? I don't know.
Wow.
It's a mystery.
But he didn't really know what gas was. But that's like the origin of the thing.
Yeah. So he like, it was in a book that was published posthumously. And he said this vapor, he wrote this in Latin, I think. But this vapor, hitherto unknown, I call by a new name, gas.
Nice.
Like, here's this weird thing. Here's this weird thing. I'm going to call it a gas.
It's wild that like we spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of years existing in a soup of particles that we cannot live without. And we didn't think to give it a name until like 400 years ago.
So what did we think farts were? What did we think was going on there?
Yeah, I don't know. Bad air. I think that there was the word air. Like,
my guess would be that air, because air was, like Hank said, early medicine was like bad air is bad for your soul or whatever. And we knew that you had to breathe and that we were breathing something, but air was probably separate from the state of matter that is gas, of like a chemical thing That is gas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Paracelsus, like anybody who's got a name like Paracelsus, where you're just like, I renamed myself a word. Those people are great. Like yes, Carl Linnaeus.
This is the first I've ever heard of him.
He's just going to, like, Carl, yeah, he's just going to be like, you know, my name's Carl, but I'm going to change my last name to Linnaeus because my whole thing is lineages.
Like,
wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
To be like, I'm going to be Hank Simon.
Hank YouTube. They'd sue your
Hank
ass.
Tube boy. Hank Tube Boy.
Mr. Tube Boy, thank you for joining us today.
Our keynote speaker today, Mr. Tube Boy.
It's Dr. Tube Boy. I changed it.
Sam, to answer your question about the word fart, it was apparently one of those imitative words.
Oh,
so it comes from Old English fjortan, F-E-O-R-T-A-N, which I guess is what they thought fart sound. They were like, oh, you're making a fjortan out of your butt. So it's a sound word rather than a gas word.
That great. Sounds about
I like
right.
that. Yeah.
But farts are they're kind of more about the sound than the smell. Like they're definitely of two parts.
Yeah.
But the sound is the part
funny.
That is
the smell.
Yeah, the sound is like
though.
Fun.
Yeah.
So the smell can be pretty bad.
An expert opinion from Dr.
Dr. Tube Boy.
Video Boy.
So that means it's time to move on to the quiz portion of our show. This week, I've got a game. We're playing a game, and it's called Brainstorm. So Brainstorm is a pretty simple game. I'll ask you a question. I'll give you a number for how many possible answers there are to the question, and you'll have 2 minutes to guess out loud, trying to avoid interrupting each other if you can. You'll get a point for any answer you get correct, and there are no penalties for wrong answers. Round number one, we're going to talk about helium. So helium is used for a bunch of stuff, more than just filling balloons, and it can be used to achieve cold temperatures for scientific applications. It can provide an unreactive environment for manufacturing certain technologies. Helium is great because referring to the poem earlier, it's like the least sticky of the particles. So it stays a gas and so until very, very low temperatures. To that end, because it is so useful, some countries have national reserves of helium extracted from natural gas. And the U.S. has one of the largest with helium extracted from plants around the country. In 2022, the U.S. Geological Survey said that there were 15 plants across 7 states that extract helium from natural gas to produce crude helium. What are those 7 states? Bonus points if you can guess the state with the largest number of helium plants. Go!
Helium plants. I've never heard of one here, so I feel like there isn't one here. There's helium in Texas.
That is correct.
Out of the ground in Texas. Great.
Ooh. Nevada.
That is not correct.
Colorado.
That is correct.
What? Oklahoma.
Correct.
Ooh, it goes that way too, eh? What's the one that Bill Clinton used to be the governor of? Arkansas.
No.
Shoot.
Mississippi?
No.
Alabama?
No.
Kansas.
That's the one. That's the one with the most.
Map of U.S.
Oh, Jesus.
New Mexico.
Yes.
Oh, shoot. That was an obvious one, huh?
North Dakota.
No.
I think that's too far up for helium, in my opinion. Utah? Does Utah have helium?
Yes.
What about...
It's all over, everybody. You only missed one.
R.I.P.
You did a great job. You really sort of centered in on the areas where helium comes from quite quickly. You missed Arizona, which is around those other states. All right, round number two. This one's a little different. It's going to be a matching game. One application for noble gases is to make neon signs. You put a noble gas in a tube, apply an electric voltage, and watch the color that forms as atoms bump into each other and excite their electrons. So for the noble gases, neon, helium, krypton, and argon, which each produce the following 4 colors, green, blue, pink, and red. Go!
Oh, I used to know this. Argon is red?
Nope.
Is that right? Oh, no.
Helium's blue.
Helium's not blue.
Feels blue. Oh, okay.
Nope.
Neon is green.
Nope.
Oh, no. Neon is red.
Yes.
Is helium pink?
Yes.
Oh, krypton is green?
Krypton is green.
Makes sense, like Superman. What's left? Argon is blue.
Oh, wow. We Sarah tied. Got in right before
oh,
you.
Oh, come on. From my perspective, we tied.
So Sarah got 3 out of that one. Good job. That was great. That was fun. All right. That was not going to take 2 minutes. And round number 3, we're going to talk about lifting gases, which are gases that have a lower density than the air around them, which lets the gas rise. That property has been very useful in designing various aircrafts like balloons and blimps. The National Aviation Academy describes 6 lifting gases that have been used to fly aircraft. What are they? Go!
Helium. Is helium one
yes.
of them?
Hydrogen?
Yes.
Oh, God, I don't know any of this. And Sari's going to know all of them.
Have we used water vapor?
No.
What's the stuff? Natural gas. What's that made out of?
Methane?
That's yeah, correct. Methane? Sam gets that
I'll let
one.
You to have that, yeah. Sam. Nitrogen gas?
No.
There's so much of it.
I will give a hint that it doesn't necessarily have to be a pure gas.
Oh. Carbon dioxide or monoxide. One of those.
No.
Both.
What's the laughing gas mixture?
Ooh, nitrous oxide.
Good guess, but no.
Tough luck, Sari.
Yeah. it wouldn't do anything dangerous, I hope, of like no not chlorine gas.
Whether it's dangerous or not does not matter.
I don't think that matters.
But
yeah.
Chlorine is not yeah, one of them. True. There is a dangerous gas or two on this list.
I'm running out of my gas knowledge. Ethylene?
Nope. You guys are going to kick yourselves.
I don't know.
With one of these. Ding, ding, ding. Time is up. The one that you're going to kick yourselves about is hot air.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no. You know, the classic gas, air.
I told you it could be a mixture. The classic thing that's inside of almost all current lifting craft.
Yeah, there's a whole balloon named after hot air. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wow.
But Sari, let's see if we can do it this way. So a gas is going to be lighter if it's a gas that is a molecule, not an atom, but it has connected to it light atoms.
So hydrogen, but not a hydrocarbon.
That already makes you sound very smart.
Yeah.
Well, hydrogens they bond to anything. They're a little, they hang out. They saturate. Nitrogen, ammonia.
That's it. There it is.
Wow.
Very, very good. Ammonia. And then the last one was you weren't going to get coal gas, which was used for a while, which has got, it's got hydrogen in it and a bunch of other stuff. Mm. You heat up coal and the gas that comes off is lighter than air. All right. I have no idea what that did for the scores, but hopefully Faith was paying attention. And Sari is at 7 and Sam is at 6. Very close,
oh,
you guys.
Wow. Neck and neck.
Not as dumb as I look, huh?
Next up, we're going to take a short break. And then it'll be time for the Fact Off.
SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Money is annoying. You have to remember so much stuff, like your bank account password and your PIN number. You got to balance your checkbook, and I don't even know what that means to balance your checkbook. You got to put all your receipts in a folder or something probably too. And who has time for all that? Not me, the old money dummy himself. But if you don't manage your finances, there can be dire consequences. Like maybe, for instance, you pay your utility bill twice, huh?
You know, we all make mistakes. We all move sometimes. My partner and I moved recently. I didn't think to check the old utility accounts, but then I was doing my taxes and going through all the utility bills. And we logged into our old account and I was like, what the heck? There's a couple $100 bill here for an apartment that we don't live in anymore. Mm. What's going on here?
The electric company's just like, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I was just too busy and too tired to figure out that out until mid-February when I was like, oh, shoot. But boy, would it have been easier if we had an app that said, you're paying your utility bill twice.
The unfortunate truth of the matter is important to keep on top of your finances. But the fortunate truth is that Rocket Money exists. Rocket Money gives you a clear view of your expenses, letting you see your spending in one place at a glance. Rocket Money gives you the power to easily track your monthly spending, create custom budgets, and even find and cancel unwanted subscription services, and also potentially utility bills for old apartments you don't live in anymore. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when you use all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use, like subscription services, and stop paying your power bill twice, like I almost did. Thankfully didn't. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your finances the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/TANGENTS.
Slash Your Tangents is brought to you by Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the did we just hit a million order stage and everywhere in between. Sari and Hank, can you name anything that works so well? It's practically magic.
Dragonflies.
Toilets.
What? Yeah, okay. Well, here's one off the top of my head. How about selling with Shopify? Ooh. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and it helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Ooh. Not to mention, it's got award-winning customer support there to help you on your path to success. And those are just a few reasons to love Shopify. But Hank, what does your company, DFTBA, like so much about Shopify?
We've been using Shopify, I think, for over 10 years now, and it really has scaled extremely effectively with us. It is both a huge amount of information at your fingertips, but also in a way that makes it fairly easy to make the decisions you need to make, learn the things you need to learn, and do the things you need to do. It's all in there. And it's one of the great joys of my life is going into the Shopify backend and being like, look at all these people who wanted a thing that I had.
What a rich life you lead indeed.
And if you want to experience great joys like that too, I've got a magic trick for you. Poof. You can now try Shopify for a month for only $1. That's right. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in, and experience the little joys of looking at the back end of a store. shopify.com/TANGENTS, all lowercase. Abracadabra.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time for the Fact Off. Our panelists have brought science facts to present to me in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they've presented their facts, I will judge them and I will award Hank bucks any way I see fit. But to decide who goes first, I have a trivia question for you. Laughing gas, as we discussed earlier, is nitrous oxide, N2O, a colorless gas that was discovered by Joseph Priestley at the end of the 18th century. But its use as an anesthetic wasn't discovered until later, when an American dentist named Horace Wells attended a demonstration where a volunteer was given the gas only to injure his leg on some nearby benches without feeling any pain. When Wells realized that nitrous oxide seemed to have pain-killing properties, he decided to put it to the test while having his tooth extracted by another dentist.
Okay.
That's great. I love that. Try it out. Also, I love, like, if you're going to be on nitrous, I'm not surprised that you injured your leg walking around at a science demonstration. But what year did Wells discover that laughing gas could be used as an anesthetic?
Could this be like disturbingly late? Could this have been like 1955 or something like that?
Could be.
Is that your guess?
That's my guess.
Okay.
I think it's earlier than that. I think it's, we just didn't know a lot about gas. 1880.
1844. Sarah coming out on top gets to decide who goes first.
Oh, I'll go first.
And I will listen with rapt attention as you attempt to blow my mind.
The substance that we call natural gas, as we've talked about, is mostly methane, which has the structure CH4 and other hydrocarbons. which are all molecules made of various carbons and hydrogens bonded together. It's one of those straightforward chemical names, which I'm grateful for as a science communicator. And natural gas is used as the fuel for lots of things like heating or cooking, in part because it's very flammable. And a big part of why many people still use it is that a huge infrastructure of pipes and whatnot exists to carry the gas to homes or factories or whatnot.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And that got me thinking, it's not easy to capture and control and move around gas. The people who sell farts are probably lying because there is definitely not an airtight seal. So you are mostly paying for an expensive weird jar of normal air. So basically, what I have brought for a fact off today is an abridged history of gas storage and transport, which I think is more exciting than it sounds.
Wow.
Yeah. Hank Hill's freaking out there, you know?
So a lot of gases today are stored in various, often metal, often cylindrical containers. I'm oversimplifying a lot. Where the gas is squeezed in at a pressure way higher than the standard atmospheric pressure. This saves space, helps with transportation, and is a consequence of having the knowledge and technology to heat and cool and separate lots of different gases and then cram them into these containers.
Yep.
Before, gas cylinders were the vaguely named gas holders, which were mostly large chambers like the size of a farm silo where natural gas or coal gas, which we talked about, which is made when coal is heated in a vacuum, were stored at atmospheric pressure. We didn't figure out squeezing until the 1900s, really.
It's tricky.
And from my understanding, there were a lot of these gas holders in Europe and or wherever chemists were. Around the 1800s, when Lavoisier was alive, he developed a desktop device called a gasometer.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Great French. Never try. That's what I do with French.
I can do Spanish, not French.
Mm-hmm.
He made this gasometer out of glass and some metal bits so that he could produce and weigh gases. And slightly before that, my boy, Jean-Baptiste Van Helmont, from the etymology section, was just experimenting with gases like carbon dioxide in closed vessels, but not necessarily transporting them around. And what I am most excited to share, but I felt like I needed more scientific and historical context to make it a fact off, is before that, in China, somewhere in the 900 to 200 BCE years, people were drilling for both brine, because salt is useful, and natural gas, because fuel is useful. And as far as I can tell from secondary sources, the main way that natural gas was drilled for, stored, and transported was through bamboo stalks, which I guess makes sense. You punch a hole in the earth and then seal up and use that same hollow tube to collect gas and prevent it from mixing with the atmosphere. And then you move it around as best you can to where you need fuel for fire. And then you light it on fire, etc. Before that, all I could find was anecdotal accounts of people finding natural gas reserves because they were set on fire by lightning or some other environmental phenomenon, but not harnessing the gas in any way because it's invisible and hard to fathom, much less control and capture. So all that to say, I'm sure there's more history of gaseous fuel, but it's not readily Googleable, so you'll have to just send it to us or go on an adventure yourself.
Do we know like what exactly they were doing with the bamboo? What were they powering?
I think like using it as fire to boil water to like extract the salt from the brine, or mainly for heat, I think. Heat or cooking. So similar things that we use natural gas for today, except instead of infrastructural system, they just were like, oh, I punched a hole in the ground and have some gas in a tree that I chopped down. I'm going to bring it wherever I need it.
Would you like fill up a wagon with bamboo full of gas?
A lot of people described it as using bamboo pipes, but that doesn't make sense to me as like forming a seal. Or there's nothing to put pressure on. So I think, yes, my impression of it is that you would use it as what later was a gas holder, like a vessel or a gas cylinder, and stop it up some way and then load it onto a cart and then bring it wherever you needed it and then somehow tap into it and let the gas out.
They had their own little Hank Hill back then. Yeah. Propane and propane accessories.
Bringing his wagon around. Here you go.
So
here's your bamboo.
Sam, what do you got?
Mining is dangerous, and coal mining is even more dangerous because coal and the gases that seep out of it are poisonous and explosive. And throughout history, yes, sometimes coal mines would explode or coal miners would drop dead for kind of mysterious reasons. So in the 1890s, a scientist named John Scott Haldane set out to investigate what undetectable thing was killing miners and causing explosions. And he quickly discovered the culprit to be carbon monoxide. But just knowing what was causing these accidents wasn't enough because, unfortunately, in addition to being toxic and flammable, carbon monoxide is odorless, so you pretty much can't notice it before it is too late. So Haldane started experimenting on himself, hoping to find ways to detect carbon monoxide before it made him pass out and die. And experimenting on himself was something that Haldane was famous for. Like in World War I, he designed the first gas mask while experimenting on himself with gases used in gas warfare. And he pioneered a lot of research into what happens when your body gets too high and too low, like the pressure is too high and too low. Mm. The dude just loved breathing weird stuff and breathing in weird ways. But anyway, I guess in this case, Haldane couldn't figure out how to detect carbon monoxide before he passed out. So he started experimenting on small animals. And eventually he found that canaries were 20 times more sensitive to carbon monoxide than people. So they would pass out in places with low enough carbon monoxide concentration to warn miners that things were getting dangerous so the miners could get out of there. So based on his findings, miners all over the world started carrying their own personal canaries in cages down into mines with them as like an advanced warning device. And you might think, as I did, mostly because of cartoons, that this was sort of a cruel practice because the canary would drop dead. But John Scott Haldane was, it seems, sort of a bleeding heart when it came to animals. So he tested on them, but he allegedly didn't like to do anything to them that he wouldn't do to himself. And so as part of his canary coal mine discovery, he also invented a sort of comedically complicated device that you could use to revive passed out canaries. So the contraption was like a steel and glass box with a grate on one side and a little oxygen tank on top. So once your canary friend started to show signs of carbon monoxide poisoning, like it stops singing or it just like falls off its perch, you could swing the little door closed and like seal it up and turn the oxygen tank on and bring your little guy back to life. So you can feel sorry for canaries and invent cages to keep them from dying all you want, but that doesn't mean that miners or mining companies will actually use them. And for that matter, a lot of images of canaries in coal mines do show them like in normal cages. But there are also photo evidence of miners actually using these resuscitating cages. And that might seem like a lot of trouble to go through for just a little bird. But there are also accounts of miners being like super into and loving their little canary friends. So I guess it does kind of make sense that you wouldn't want them to die. Canaries were used in coal mines until 1986 when a portable poison gas detector was introduced to mines, which I thought was just crazy that it took so long
to get
anything besides a bird.
I mean, I guess I knew that they're like it wasn't just a saying, but I didn't realize how institutionalized and like widespread the practice was.
I knew they used them because I'm from Butte where a lot of mining happened, but I thought for sure they just croaked and the miners were like, eh, whatever. But
yeah, everybody go like, leave the bird.
Yeah.
the bird's like, leave without me. But yes, it's a little bird in a little cage. Now I want to know all about this person and his relationship with this canary.
Yeah, would they bring him home? Cute. Or was there like a canary keeper at the mine? So many questions.
I bet they brought
him home.
That
would be a cool job. Like a little intern at the mine. Mm-hmm. Get to be a canary keeper.
Yeah.
All right. So you were really close coming into this. And both of those facts were very good. But for pure ability to make a great TikTok out of it, Sam's going to be the winner of this episode. Congratulations, yeah. Sam.
Thank you. I humbly accept.
Glad. That would be really weird if you didn't. So now it's time to ask the Science Couch, where we got a question for our couch of finely honed scientific minds.
Napoleon on Discord asks, what makes farts so loud? Great question. An all-time question.
An all-time question.
A real everyman, you know, kind of question.
I feel like I'm not sure. Things that make sounds loud are usually some kind of resonance where, you know, like our face is full of resonance chambers so we can make louder or richer sounds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your guitar's got a big resonance chamber in it. Butts don't have a resonance chamber. So that can't be that.
Is it vibrating butt cheeks?
Yeah, I wonder to what extent, like, I feel like there's two potential fart noises. There's like a noise of the actual cheeks, And that makes, so like what's happening in that situation is a pressure builds up until it, the cheeks separate, and then the pressure is released and there's no pressure anymore. So they slap back together.
Yeah.
And that happens over and over again because the pressure continues to rebuild every time the cheeks slap back together. Uh-huh. But I think that also happens with the anus itself, where the anus kind of can do some slapping. And so I wonder, I don't know if there's like two different fart noises, like in two different mechanisms, or if they sort of like happen together somehow. Because it seems like the kind of thing that I would have thought about before, but I don't feel like I've put a lot of mental energy behind it. Sarah nodded during that, which makes me feel good.
She was getting something right.
So the butt cheeks one, the jury is out. I think most people say no. I think most people say no, butt cheeks don't vibrate fast enough to like this motion that you're going to, your butt cheek, the way that gas comes out, it's not going to go more than a little bit. In a cartoon, the butt cheeks are vibrating all over the place because that's how they show the fart. But in real life, the gas comes out fast enough that the noise isn't coming from the butt cheeks.
This is shocking. Together. I can't believe it.
You heard it here first.
Sam's whole vision of the world is changing right now.
Yeah.
So but it's just anus.
It's all anus, as far as we can tell. Where kind of like how like trumpet players use their mouth or as like an the buzzing noise, make the vibrations. Your anal sphincter does that little vibration. And that noise is affected by the velocity of the gas as you push it out, the volume of gas, and then your natural, personal shape
Everybody's
and size.
Everybody's got a different fart
anus.
Voice, huh?
Everyone, yeah. It's got Much a different like everyone's anus. Got a little different a hole on the face. People've got a different hole on the butt. and that changes your like resting tone of fart. And like, so you can manipulate the sounds of farts by like tightening or releasing. So as you, anyone has tried to hold in a fart or release it gradually over time, and that can change the volume and pitch of a fart because it changes the way that muscle vibrates.
And I don't know if you're trying to have a fart not make noise, what you want is for the pressure to be enough to overcome the tightness of the sphincter. And enough to keep it open and not to have the thing happen where it's opening, like the pressure opens it and then the release of pressure closes it again so that the pressure builds up again. So you, and that's a function both of like the pressure and of the looseness or tightness of the sphincter. And so those of us who can do a good job. And I do think that like what it makes it seem like it's the butt cheeks is that if you lean off of the thing, you can make it so that the fart noise. But I think that that's actually loosening not the butt cheeks, but it's loosening the sphincter. Because when you're sitting on your butt, you're putting pressure on that muscle.
I feel like I'm in college right now. That was a very important one I just learned.
Well, yeah, and like you also have to consider all of what I read is specifically about the sphincter. And its vibrations, like more air coming out at once tend to be louder, less air coming out, like seeping out, tend to be not from swallowed air, but from intestinally generated air. So those are like the silent but deadly
farts. They're stinkier.
Farts. They're stinkier, but like louder ones are like you swallow
because
a lot of air, you drink a soda.
Drink a Coke,
So silent but deadly is scientifically accurate. Is that what basically you're saying? Wow.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, there's like your pants to think about, other layers that create that
there's always your
for the
pants
sound.
You gotta think about your pants. Please don't forget them.
The squeaky chair beneath you that may or may not be causing the fart, or if it's just a plasticky chair, is it echoing up? I don't know. Farts
or does the chair become like a resonance chamber? And I wonder if like the colon, like a colon full of gas is its own resonance chamber where that's amplifying some of the sound.
That I'm not sure of, there's some, most of that study of like echoing farts comes along with some sort of loss of bowel control where like you can't hold in a fart because you can't control the sphincter. And so that usually is like both fart and stool and all kinds of gastro related issues. And so at that point, if you can't hold in a fart and the air is just coming out, then probably the colon's going to echo it some more too, because it's just like, it's all coming out.
I know that there are some younger listeners to SciShow Tangents, and to them, I want to say, I hope this has been a lot of fun. That your parents are just really working through it right now. And also, I hope that you just learned the word stool, and that Sari worked really hard to not say the word shart.
Yeah.
If you want to ask the Science Couch your question, you can follow us on Twitter at SciShow Tangents, where we'll tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on Discord. Thank you to at Yidi and at Liz Does Museums and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. If you like this show and you want to help us out, very easy to do that. First, you can go to patreon.com/SciShow Tangents. You can become a patron. You get the access to things like our newsletter and our bonus episodes. Special thanks to patrons John Pollock and Les Aker. Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That's super helpful, and it helps us know what you like about the show. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us.
Tell people about us.
Because how else are they going to find out how farts truly work? Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz. Our editor is Seth Glickspin. Our story editor is Alex Billow. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bazzio. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Hank Green. And of course, we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. Animals make all kinds of noises when they're surprised. And we know of two species of snakes, the Sonoran coral snake and the Western hooknose snake, that use a technique called cloacal popping, which is basically farting that's supposed to be scary. The cloaca is a multipurpose hole that...
Unlike our farts that just are scary. that's not
our
the intent.
Terrifying. Yeah.
They can be.
The cloaca is a multi-purpose hole that deals with waste and reproduction, so there's some muscle control involved. To make these low, frequent popping noises, these snakes rhythmically contract and release their cloacal sphincter muscles to compress the gas inside them and squeeze it out in sudden bursts, just like a fart we were talking about. And if there's other waste up in there, it might fling out with the expelled gas, too. Wow,
undignified. Yeah. Undignified.
Look,
but is scary?
There's no dignity in life and death.
You're already a snake. You're scary. You don't have to shit and fart.
Pop, pop.
Pop, pop!